linoleum knife.
I didn't hate that.
Well, I didn't think you would. It doesn't have loud anything or guitars or stuff.
No.
Saint Etienne is what that is.
Lovely. Oh, I know. I see. Yes, I see what you did there.
Because of things that we're going to talk about.
This is a podcast about movies.
Finally, you're ready to go.
Oh, please.
After all that preparation.
You had to make tea, and then you had to find the little doohickey for your headphones that you lost. So don't come crying to me about not being ready.
I don't know. You really, you hold me back.
Uh-huh. Fine. Take it solo. See how long you'd last. You don't even know how to set up this equipment. Hold you back. You are ridiculous, and you are Dave White of Movies.com.
You are correct, and you are Alonso. Alonso.
Shut up.
Alonso Duralde of TheRap.com and What the Flick. Yes, I would not. There would be no, and that nothing would happen.
You would be talking to the walls.
Like, I would just, like, let's say you got hit by a double-decker bus, which crashed into us, and I lived.
Oh, so you're not going to die by my side?
No, no. I don't want to die by your side.
Fine.
There would be no more podcasts.
you would be Kate Blanchett wandering the streets, spouting your opinions to one.
Yes. Nice Hermes belt. Wrapped around two of them, fused together.
Clutching a martini.
To fit my...
your slim waist.
My manly waist. Mm. My man-sized waist.
So we're going to spend the next 2 hours talking about Ben Affleck being cast as Batman and how, in the words of...
I'm outraged.
In the words of Little Edie from Grey Gardens, it's the worst thing to happen in this country ever.
I would like everyone to go to Twitter and go to my friend Nayland Blake, who is
an artist.
A friend of the podcast and also a famous artist man.
Yes.
He wants to be Batman, and I think I think he should be Batman. I believe Nayland for Batman, or for Mansquito.
Yes, Mansquito, or Batmansquito.
Batmansquito, Mansquito 2, or Batman. He could be any of those things.
I think I may have found my favorite tweet on this whole subject.
Okay,
this was pointed to me. Josh Olson, who is my Facebook friend, he co-wrote the screenplay of History of Violence, among other things.
Sorry, my tea strainer.
Stop with your noises.
Well, I gotta strain the tea.
You're straining my patience. Anyway, he pointed out that Kyle Baker, who's a famous comics guy, tweeted in all caps, "They're making a mockery of the story of a billionaire who dresses as a bat to fight evil clowns. They're ruining it." I think that covers it.
Nayland for Batman.
Yes, well, that too.
So before we get to the world's end, we're going to jump right into movies because we got a lot of movies and a lot of letters and, you know,
things. I think we should first off mention, however,
that I'm drinking lavender tea.
Okay. The second thing. Did you have anything else to add about your lavender tea?
Well, it ties into my... what else?
I was going to... wanted to let people know that linoleum...
Everything I say is connected to something else.
Linoleum-knife.com...
Is happening. I'm going to sneeze.
That's charming.
I'm really going to sneeze right now. You might pause it.
Okay, fine. Okay, we spared you, dear listener, but Dave White just now blew his nose and it sounded like an old Looney Tunes honk. Like, I almost imagine the sides of the hanky just, like, billowing in the breeze. That was hilarious.
Ooga!
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. What were we talking about?
Linoleum-knife.com.
Is a thing that's happening.
It's a thing that is happening.
It is now on the internet. It's available for you to go and look at.
I've written a whole article.
There's a whole article posted to Soon there will be two.
There will be more coming.
This is the soft launch phase.
Yes. After Labor Day, we really hit the ground running.
It's going to be amazing.
Oh, my God.
After Labor Day.
You won't believe it after Labor Day.
Because here's the thing. It's the end of August, and no one is paying attention to anything right now.
It's too hot.
It's too hot. People are, even when they're not on vacation, people have checked out. Like
mentally, yes.
There's no... I guarantee you, neither one of us will be able to get a publicist to respond to us this week.
It's already Labor Day. It might as well be.
And the I feel the same way.
Yeah.
You know, the movies don't feel consequential.
No.
Really. I mean, this week's do, but
I have several
next week and the week after. Yeah. No.
I have several dozen unread emails sort of stacked up in my box. I'm just like, I just. Because they're not super pressing, and I'm just
like I'm. Here's the thing I'm thinking about. I'm looking forward to most this week.
I'm talking about my personal email box, of course, not the Linoleum Knife mailbox, which we are totally on top of.
No, you all
Linoleum Podcast
when
at
you
gmail.com.
Speak, we jump.
Yes.
To attention.
And we are not having comments on linoleum-knife.com because they're for suckers. So,
no comments.
For the meantime, we are having people write us letters like in the old days. And not, if we could, we'd make you write letters with pen and paper. But we won't do that.
I believe we mentioned that once before and you scoffed at me.
Yes.
I said that you should have some lovely.
And a signet wax.
Lovely,
yes,
stationery.
Right. Yeah, we're not doing that. But you can send us an email at
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Send us a real letter in the mail.
We're not giving that address out.
Yeah, we are. You can email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and say, I want to send you a letter. Perhaps a greeting card, a happy Labor Day, or happy whatever other holiday is in September. Because, you know, when coming up, we're going to have Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas, and people are going to want to send us holiday greeting cards for all three of those holidays. I'm sure. And
I know one person who will send us greeting cards for all three of those holidays.
I know.
Bless his heart.
And he's delightful. He's actually coming to visit us soon.
Yes.
Yes, email us, and we'll give you our home address. Just promise not to home invasion us.
Fair enough.
Or set explosive devices on the front doorstep or under our cars.
Yes.
Because we have a gate now. You can't get down there.
And no flaming bags of poop either.
None of that. No. Lovely, lovely handwritten letters.
Yes. And later in the year, we'll be talking to you about how you can buy our...
Have yourself a movie little Christmas.
Yes. And other books written by one or the other of us signed for your holiday pleasure.
It'll all be you.
Yeah, well, that one, but other ones. People like
buying
that.
Mine's out of print, and I don't care anymore.
Oh, come on.
No, I don't care anymore.
You would deny our listeners a signed copy if they wanted one?
Yes.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes. I'm denying them right now.
No.
You're all denied.
That is, I'm
real busy.
I know, in your heart of hearts.
I'm super busy right
you
now.
You want to share your work.
Okay, so I saw The Grandmaster today.
Yes.
And I went to the AMC Century City with William Bibbiani.
Yes.
Of the B-Movies podcast.
And CraveOnline.com.
And we met at Bread Bar beneath, on the movies on the second level.
Bread Bar is as awesome as its name implies.
Mm-hmm. It's all bread. Mm. Once upon a time, I went to Bread Bar on a Friday morning before having to go see Let's Go to Prison.
I remember this.
They did not show Let's Go to Prison to the press.
Imagine.
So I had to go see it. On a Friday morning, and I went to Bread Bar, and they have a thing at Bread Bar called the Alpine Loaf, which is an entire loaf of bread shot through with cheese.
Yes.
It is a loaf of cheesy bread.
And generally, you can get these in individual sizes.
But also, they sell them in
large
loaves. But
also, you can get a
bought the whole loaf, thinking, this is going to be great. I'm going to go home. I'm going to make a grilled cheese sandwich with cheesy bread, and Alonzo's going to love this.
That's a great idea.
It was a super great idea.
Ooh, tell them what happened.
I ate the almost entire loaf of bread while watching Let's Go to Prison. I'm not ashamed of that.
Look, you're sitting in the dark. You don't notice.
I was sitting in the dark, practically alone.
I'm sure.
and enjoying the comedy of Let's Go to Prison, mm-hmm. all those soap jokes mm-hmm. that they had on display.
Because male rape is hilarious.
Super rape jokes are super great when it comes to man on man in a prison.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves that.
And I would love to know if there is a single like contemporary American film in which, not even set in a prison, in which the concept of a male character going to prison is mentioned in passing in a conversation without the follow up of they like guys like you in prison or you know what they do to guys like you in prison.
What year from when to when?
Let's say like after 1970.
Okay. No.
I don't think so.
So
I got no grilled cheese.
A digression.
You ate the whole loaf.
A digression. If you ever want to watch a man prison movie, watch Fortune and Men's Eyes. Starring the astounding Michael Greer.
Yes.
And your mind will be blown, and you will have the best time in the whole world.
And you know what? Make an evening of it.
Yeah.
You can double bill it with Caged Men,
the
Canadian exploitation film
that we did a commentary for. We did a half-assed commentary
from Code Red DVD.
We were not like good on that commentary.
I think we were sharp.
You know, we weren't. And I don't even want people to listen to it because
come on,
because we're fixing to start doing commentaries.
True.
That we want people to actually buy.
Well, okay, that was a good dry run to sort of teach us the mechanics.
Very dry run. Anyway. So I'm sitting alone in the theater and the bread smells so good. It's warm.
I've just finished
making it. Mm-hmm. And it was warm and I thought, I'm just going to have some of this cheesy bread while I watch Let's Go to Prison. So I had some cheesy bread and then I had a little more. And then I reached down into the bag about half.
And then you went to a fugue state.
Two thirds of the way through the movie. And I thought, oh, okay, I should stop because there's probably only about... I've probably eaten almost maybe half a loaf because that's a lot, you know.
And you not only eaten the whole thing,
I had
but
eaten
part of
about
the bag, too.
80% right? of this bread. Like, there was like a hand, enough to make a sandwich and a half, I think, left.
You had a heel left.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. Here's the thing. I would do that again and again and again. If I could.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Sometimes you're in the dark, you're distracted, you just, you know, there's food that there's like an endless supply. You put your hand in the bag and more food comes out. I remember one time back in Dallas, I may have told this story on the podcast before.
We're going to start talking about movies any minute.
We promise. I went to, I remember this, it was an advanced screening of the movie version of Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe.
Yes.
The Lily Tomlin one-woman mm-hmm. show. And I was trying to be thrifty. So instead of buying concessions at the theater, I went to the grocery store and bought a one-pound bag of Twizzlers, which I smuggled in, thinking, okay, well, I'll have, you know, like, I'd have as many...
Where, what was your smuggle pocket?
I think I had these olive drab cargo pants. They kind of looked like army pants, Cargo pants. They were long pants, but they had the cargo pockets on the side.
Great.
So I just tucked it in there. And I thought...
You in the cargo shorts and the pants and the, oh man, everything.
I just like not sitting on my wallet. Is that so wrong? Anyway.
You like not looking good in pants or shorts is what you like.
I very rarely wear them, so get off my back.
Anymore, I hounded you out of it.
You don't... No, that's not why.
Oh, yes it is. I've shamed and scolded you enough times to make you quit it.
Keep it up, and I'm going to be wearing them every day for the next month.
No, you aren't.
Oh, yeah, I am.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Don't dare me.
Maybe all your bros down in San Diego roll that way. Cargo short nation.
Do not start wars with the 619. That's just going to get ugly.
What are they going to do? They're going to come fight me? They're not. They're lazy.
Okay, really.
How you like me now, friends in the 619?
Anyway, so I smuggle in this pound of Twizzlers thinking, okay, I'm just going to have... You know, the requisite number that I would have in a regular theater pack of Twizzlers and then save the rest, you know, for future movies.
My San Diego friends know that I adore them.
Okay.
With super love. Practically a boner. That's really how much I love them.
But you can't tell because you're wearing cargo shorts.
That's No, I'm not worried cars are short. They are.
Anyway, so of course, cut to, like, you know, 90% of the way into the movie, and suddenly I think, oh.
Tummy ache.
And I look down, and there are literally two Twizzlers left in the bag.
The Candyman can. You're good.
And I just thought, oh, this was a bad idea.
Yes.
But, you know, yes. it was a learning experience. It was a teachable moment.
What did you learn?
That if I sneak a pound of candy into a movie with I will eat a pound of candy.
I learned that if I sneak a loaf of bread into a movie theater, I will eat an entire loaf of bread.
Yes.
But I don't feel bad about it.
No, bread bar is great.
And it did not give me a tummy ache. It just made me feel super great.
Well, the Alpine, I'm sure your coat was shiny. Yes. The Alpine is great. They have these great sort of almond, chocolatey pastries that are delicious. I like getting their little pretzel rolls and using them as hamburger buns.
Bread Bar does not sponsor this podcast.
No.
But they should.
Yeah, no kidding. Although some fast food chain has now gotten on the pretzel bandwagon. No, actually it's the counter. You can get pretzel bun at the counter now.
Can you really?
Yes, but we were way ahead of the curve on that.
So we met, Bibbs and I met at 9:30 this morning at Bread Bar, and he had Eggs Benedict, and I had a blueberry pastry. And on their menu they only have tropical green tea. You know that is not the kind of green tea that I want to have.
Is it going to have like mango or coconut in it or something?
Yes, like floral and blah.
Yeah.
And I look, I'm hemming and hawing, and the woman behind the counter goes, "What can I help you with?" And I said, "All right, what? Do you have other kinds of green tea that aren't tropical? Do you have like roasty, nutty, heartier kind of?"
Do you have any black metal green tea?
And she says, this is what she says to me. She goes, "You don't want lady tea is what you're trying to tell me." I said, it's not.
Normally you would totally be all about lady tea.
I don't want to gender type
and
this.
And a lady candle.
I said, I don't want to gender type this, but I don't want to drink tea that's for weak people.
You are lucky that I'm paying attention, by the way, because when we went to Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf the other day.
Yeah.
You know, they have like seven different green teas. And yes. I specifically ordered you the Genmaicha because I know you like that one.
It's all right.
And they were, well, it's your favorite of theirs. Mm-hmm. And they were, and the guy rang up some sort of pepperminty thing. And I was like, no. I had to repeat most of the order to this guy.
Of course.
Clearly, his head was not in the game.
He was wishing he was at Starbucks.
Probably.
But so anyway, all of this to say that currently I'm drinking lavender and lemongrass tea.
Ah.
Yeah. So I'm feeling.
So if you're playing along at home.
This is lady tea. This is tea for weak people.
This is an afternoon tea.
This is an afternoon tea.
You need a more potent morning tea.
Yeah. After like 3 o'clock. It's 3 o'clock right now.
For seeing an Asian film.
But I can't be jacking myself up on caffeine and tea after 3 o'clock. Mm. Or else I'll be Danny McBride in
Hot Rod.
Hot Rod, yeah. That's all. And people confuse me with him enough already.
Exactly. Especially since you got that perm.
The white trash is strong with me. So.
Alrighty.
We saw the Grandmaster.
And
I think it's great. I have yet to write my review because I missed the press screening. So my review will go up on movies.com. Movies.com will have my review sometime this week.
Okay. Mine is already up on the wrap. I think it has some really, really gorgeous sequences, which does not surprise me because it is directed by Wong Kar-wai.
It's one of the most beautiful-looking films of the year.
Yeah. No question. Yeah. Even without Christopher Doyle, Wong Kar-wai still knows how to...
Even without Christopher Doyle, he can make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And boy, after My Blueberry Nights, it's nice to have him sort of back to form.
Yes.
Although I have to say, let's talk a little about what this movie is. It is a martial arts film. It is a wuxia film. A term I don't use nearly enough, and I don't know, maybe I shouldn't use it at all. Anyway, it's a Chinese martial arts movie, which is, and it's not the first time that he's made one of these. I mean, people think of him as the In the Mood for Love guy, but he previously did Ashes of Time,
yes,
which was also a wuxia film. It is a biopic about a guy named Ip Man, who is best known in this country as the guy who taught Kung Fu to Bruce Lee.
Yes.
But he was basically a master of the Wing Chun style. Was it last week you were talking? No, that was UN Command, sorry. Anyway, Wing Chun style fighting of Kung Fu, and he did a great... He did a lot of work in terms of uniting the Southern Chinese and Northern Chinese branches of Kung Fu.
Yes.
After they had very legendarily been rivals and enemies for a long time. There's been a lot of talk about the different versions of this film. The cut that's playing in China is, I think, 15 or 20 minutes longer, and then... I think they cut 15 minutes out of the Chinese version that played in some festivals in Europe, and then it got another 7 or 8 minutes cut before the Weinstein Company released it in the U.S., which is part of what my article on linoleum knife.
Hey.
Sorry.
Why don't you clear your throat a little harder into the mic there?
Sorry, that caught me by surprise.
Sorry, listeners.
is what my article on linoleumknife.com is about director's versions. I I've heard people online say, ugh, the cuts ruined this movie and it was a masterpiece, and other people are saying, ugh, I saw the first version and it really needed to lose that 15. So I don't know. I do know that what I like about Wong Kar-wai movies is the way he tells a story in practically every way possible, apart from just telling you a story.
Yes.
You know, he can tell you everything you need to know about characters with long scenes of them staring at each other, with the color gels that he put on the lights, with the costumes, with the choice of old pop song that is happening in the scene. You know, you watch things like Days of Being Wild or Happy Together. I think just one of the great living filmmakers, you know. And so this movie kind of feels like he's sort of strapped to a more conventional narrative because it's a biopic, because it is, you know, well, this happened and this happened and then he went here and then this, you know, then the Japanese invaded and then he moved to Hong Kong. And the way that it's structured is, and I don't know what the Chinese cut is like, maybe to explain to Western audiences details that if you live in China and you know anything about Kung Fu, you would already know this stuff. So there are these...
Possibly.
I don't know. But there are these... So there are these intertitles where it's like, you know, 1945, blah, 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 blah. And that really breaks up the movie to me a lot. I didn't feel like...
It helped me understand.
It's nice to have a context. I totally get that. But when I see a Wong Kar-wai movie, I'm happy to just jump in the deep end.
I understand.
And kind of go with the flow that he lays out.
Yes.
And this felt like, you know, there wasn't a flow. There was a buoy every 10 feet with a light on it, you know.
Yeah.
And so that
narratively, this is the most easy to follow along with, you know.
But that being said, however, it is so beautiful, and the fighting sequences are breathtaking. And, you know, Tony Leung Chua and Zi Zhang, she changed her name for the West.
She reversed her name for English speakers.
Yes, yes. You know, are great together. They both starred in Wong's 2046. And
Bibbs and I were talking about Tony Leung, about he is, well, the word we used was that 12-letter word, but...
he is a sexy MF.
Is there a smoother MF-er in the world, is what I asked Bibbs, and he goes, there is not.
No, he is a cat. He is a cool cat. so they're great to watch together. You know, in my review, I said, you know, pining is something that American movie stars don't do so much anymore.
Why should they?
And here you've got this couple who are clearly, like, meant to be together, but he's married and she's taken a vow of chastity to avenge her father's death.
Yes.
You know how these things happen.
That's exactly how things should happen.
Yeah, and so it's so just, their scenes together are amazing. She has this fight scene against her mortal enemy at a train station at night, and the snow is falling, and she's wearing this fur coat with a big black collar. So she's standing, you know, it's at night, and she's got the fur collar on. So literally, the face of Zi Zhang is just floating in the inky blackness, and it's so great.
Now, here's interesting that you bring that up, that scene specifically up. Bibbs did not like that scene.
Really?
He did not like so much the fight scenes, especially the one at the train station, because there was not, and if I'll say, if you're not, if you go to this and you really are into watching like a fight from start to finish presented in front of you,
oh well, I see him.
What you are going to get is, and here comes drinking game. Although this was never a drinking game moment, I'm realizing now that it's something I do almost every show or every other show. There's a Bressonian use of hands and feet going on. And
go on.
And I'm sorry. Here, okay. I'm sorry I'm obsessed with Bresson, but I'm obsessed with Bresson.
Clearly.
He occupies my thoughts regularly.
We were just discussing this week that filmmaker Louis Leterrier,
yeah,
Leterrier is the son of the star of A Man Escaped.
Yes. But I'm like fixated on this director. And I again, much like eating an entire loaf of bread during Let's Go to Prison, I shan't apologize for that. But as I watch these fight scenes, I'm realizing that he's showing you
the money shots,
gestures and parts of bodies, and in a way that feels like it is meant to be suggestive of the whole rather than showing you the whole. Now, unfortunately, we have a style of action cinematography going on in the United States right now, which privileges, you know, blenderized sensation over everything else, which is not Bressonian.
No.
It is just terrible.
Well, yeah, it's like, I think we talked about this when I saw
these fight scenes are kind of slow.
Sure.
The snow is falling in slow motion behind them as
the
they
rain.
Play. But often, the movements are happening in slow motion. In fact, people walk in slow motion. They do a lot of things in slow motion in this movie.
But obviously, so much of what this movie is about is the technique.
Yes.
And what the technique says about where you're from,
yes,
or how you learned, or
yes,
what your... it comes from somewhere.
They talk about their technique, then they show you their technique.
Exactly.
First I have the spade, and then the pin, and then the sheath.
It's relevant to these characters. So
I am a fan of the sheath, because that's when your neck gets jabbed.
Yes.
I like a good neck jab.
It's like what Melissa McCarthy does in Identity Thief. You know, there's an old saying, you know, tell me what you eat, then I'll tell you who you are.
Right.
You know, and in this movie, it's like
an entire loaf of cheese bread.
Yeah, yes, you're a pig. But no, the way that these people do kung fu tells you what you need to know about them, you know, as you come to know it in this movie and the way it's described to you. So I was okay with that. It's not like... I think we might have talked about this when I watched the extras on one of the recent, the 50th anniversary reissue they did of Singin' in the Rain, where they interview, or 60, I don't even know how old it was. Anyway, they interview people like Adam Shankman and people who do choreography for Glee and stuff.
Right.
And they all talk about, oh, well, it was so amazing that they had the time to do rehearsals. And that's why in old movies, you would see these amazing musical numbers play out in long, long takes without a bunch of editing. And the reason that there's so much editing now is because they don't have the time to learn it as well. They don't perform it that way. So they have to cut to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this film, I never got the impression that they were cutting just because somebody tripped or there was a mistake. I mean, it's very deliberate. It is intentional, as opposed to Michael Bay or somebody who...
As opposed to getting tons of coverage.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I see Bibbs's point. It's not... Yeah, this is not a Jackie Chan movie.
No.
You know, you're not going to get, like, the big factory battle scene at the end of, you know, Mr. Canton and Lady Rose or something. It's just... It is... You know, again, I mean, and I guess this does sort of fit in the Wong Kar-wai thing of people are expressing themselves through something other than dialogue. And in this case, it just happens to be, you know, the 64 hands, what is it, the 12 hands?
64 hands.
64 hands style of kung fu.
I told you.
You're the 12 hands of the guests.
My kung fu style is double sitting and 12-hand pastry eating.
Right. So it opened limited this weekend in New York and L.A. and had staggeringly...
Because we're better.
Yes, and it had a staggeringly huge per-screen average, so it should be...
10 o'clock Sunday morning screening at the AMC had a lot of folks.
Really?
And they were all very well-behaved.
Oh, good.
I mean, there was some... There was a ponytail bro, like, four seats down from us, who took his shoes off and was bare feet seat in front of him.
God. And then you can never sit there again.
No.
I saw somebody put their bare foot on an armrest in the back row of the Arclight once, and it's just like, ugh.
Keep it in the shoe and keep your shoe on the ground. Yeah.
So anyway, Grandmaster had a big opening. It will be opening wider. I hope it will be opening to Montclair and playing at the Mission Tiki.
Wouldn't that be awesome if we could go to the drive-in to see that?
Because we saw the poster
there. They had the poster up there, so that means it should come there.
That's the law.
Look, when we went to what's the one in City of Industry?
The Vineland.
When we went to the Vineland.
The From Justin to Kelly poster.
And they had the Justin to Kelly poster up. From Justin to Kelly came to that drive-in.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
It didn't. We were going to go, and they didn't open it.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm still mad about it. That's why I knew you were going to say it was Justin to Kelly. Okay, I'm not so mad about it.
10 years later, the grudge that burns in the heart of Alonzo Duralde, film critic of TheRap.com, author of two film books, The burning flame of hate that From Justin to Kelly did not come to the Vineland drive-in has not been extinguished.
That's a movie that deserves to be seen in a drive-in.
If anyone out there knows Kelly Clarkson, please tell her if there's any way that she can get in her time machine. Guys, I'm sure she's rich enough now that she owns one.
Probably.
She goes to go back in time and personally fix this issue.
And for us, do a beach towel dance.
Do a dance with the beach towel in the skirt made of neckties. Because we love you, Kelly Clarkson, that much.
People, if you have not seen From Justin to Kelly,
you really should see it. You are missing out.
Yeah,
it's the grandmaster of American Idol films.
Absolutely, no question.
So also we saw The World's End.
Yes.
Which is why I played Saint-Étienne.
Right.
Because Saint-Étienne came out of the early 90s of England, that from the world of the early 90s dance-ish music.
Manchester.
Well, they weren't from that era. Yeah,
though.
And there's a Saint-Étienne joke in The World's End, and I'm not going to tell you what it is or where it happens. If you're a big Saint-Étienne fan, you will know it.
There are quite a few lines of dialogue.
It's a visual gag. That's all.
There are quite a few lines of dialogue also that assume that you know that era of
music.
You know, when Simon Pegg's character does at one point actually say to someone with no irony whatsoever, "I'm free to do what I want any old time."
Right. So it is about five estranged friends. 20 years ago, they met. They were high school buddies together, and they went on a 12 pints at 12 pubs,
the Golden Mile in their small town,
Newton, whatever
something,
and they never agreed to meet 20 years later. But Simon Pegg, as the least together and least successful of them all,
Gary King,
who has never let go of that moment in his life.
Of youthful glory.
To the point where when he puts in the cassette into the tape player of the early 90s bands with Happy Mondays and Blur and Pulp and Suede.
In his late 80s car.
Stone Roses and the Spiral Carpets. They say, "Where did you find this tape?" And he said, "Right here in the car." Like it's been there the whole time.
Yeah, so he said, "This song was on a tape I made you." Yeah, this is it.
Okay, so here's first of all, just a little digression. That's a lie. There's no tape survives living in a car for that long.
I was going to say, our kitchen would beg to differ, but it's not a car.
Because cars endure extremes of heat and cold.
Even in England?
Mostly cold. and there's no
snap.
No way. They snap, they break, that would not, especially in a car like the one that he has in this film, where you know that tape just lived on the floor. And so,
or it never left the player.
And so the he gathers them all together, these four friends of his, though they don't want to be gathered because they don't like each other anymore.
They especially don't like him.
They especially don't like him anymore because he's a mess. And you find out over the course of the film just how much of a mess he has become.
The four friends are played by Nick Frost, of course, Patty Considine, Eddie Marzan, and Martin Freeman.
Yes. And he manages to corral them all. They go back on the 12 Pints and 12 Pubs crawl. And then they encounter otherworldly forces that suggest that before they get to the pub that is called the World's End, the world might actually end.
Yeah. Things are not in the town is not exactly how they left it.
Yeah. So, in my review on movies.com, I took a position that I do not think maybe any other film critic took.
Do tell.
I viewed it in the light of it's always fair weather.
Right. Which we saw
last weekend at the New Beverly. Curated by director Edgar Wright, who directed The World's End.
He was in a double feature with The Big Chill.
And I didn't know anything about It's Always Fair Weather going into it, other than the clip of Dolores Gray that you had shown me of her singing Thanks a Lot, But No Thanks, where she shoots people and explodes things.
So it opens trapdoors.
Automatically, that makes me want to see this film. I didn't know who directed it. I knew barely like that maybe Gene Kelly was in it. That's everything I knew. But it's from Stanley Donen and also directed, co-directed by Gene Kelly.
Right, the third of their collaborations.
And the third of their collaborations, Singin' in the Rain. And An American in Paris.
No.
Not An American on the Town. I'm sorry. What's interesting about It's Always Fair Weather is that it's about three friends who spend 10 years out of each other's lives.
After being in World War II together.
Who come together at a bar and realize they don't like each other anymore. They're not friends anymore. They're fully estranged from each other. And they hate themselves, too, for being disappointments. And during the course of The World's End, you realize that everyone else is more successful than Simon Pegg, but none of them are happy either.
Right.
And they're all kind of down on themselves as well.
And so they wind up sort of simultaneously hating how much of a mess the Simon Pegg character is, but at the same time sort of at least envying his sort of free-spiritedness and
I didn't get that they envied him very much.
I think there's a level to which they long for that level of untetheredness.
Well, perhaps. But where I'm going with this is that the music in The World's End never stops, if you notice.
Yeah.
It goes from one early 90s British pop song to another. And they are all... They're expertly curated songs because they are all exactly from that moment. They are all exactly, you know, connected to one another from this very specific thing that was happening there.
I didn't
that even, really would have been part of their lives at the moment. And they are all very happy songs with the exception of a couple. There's an In Spiral Carpets song in the movie that is not a happy song, but it comes closer to the end. And they serve as this sort of ecstatic counterpoint to everyone else, all the characters just being on a complete bummer. And so what you've got in On the Town are these crazy happy songs where people are jumping up and down and dancing on trash cans in the street.
No, you mean It's Always Fair Weather.
Did I say It's Always Fair Weather?
You said On the Town.
On the Town. It's Always Fair Weather. These really upbeat, crazy songs set against character development that is a super downer and full of dark, themes. And right. So these movies are the same movie.
Well, and, you know, I mean, we didn't stay for The Big Chill, but if you think about it.
I've seen The Big Chill.
Yes, but my point
is... The Big
is,
Chill is the same thing.
Exactly. It's a movie about middle-aged disappointment, about people being disappointed with each other and themselves, and it's blanketed with all these, woo, Motown songs,
right.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the World's End soundtrack becomes the Big Chill soundtrack for today's 30-somethings. Well, I didn't notice...
40-somethings.
Really. Well, you know what I mean. Yeah. Late 30s, early 40s.
Right.
I didn't even notice until the closing credits that Set Adrift on Memory Bliss was stuck in there somewhere.
I didn't notice that being in there either. It's also very funny.
Yes.
It's the
third of the trilogy of Edgar Wright movies that he co-wrote with Simon Pegg.
I think it's less funny than Shaun of the Dead. I think it's less funny than Hot Fuzz, but that is because there's more downbeat stuff going
on. Sure. I think it's the best of the three films. I think it's the most fully realized of what they're setting out to do, and I think the most ambitious.
I'll tell you who it's the best for is Nick Frost.
Oh, because yeah.
He takes the whole movie away.
He's not the doofus for once.
He's not the doofus. He's like this really unhappy, angry guy who's specifically angry at Simon Pegg because they were best friends. Mm-hmm. And
he's the most betrayed.
And he's the grumpiest, the angriest, the least willing to go along. And then when everything goes crazy, he hulks out and kicks ass. And it's a pleasure to watch him go crazy.
And he keeps ragging on Simon Pegg, even when they're running for their lives.
And the physicality of his performance belies everything you would think about a fat man.
True.
He is
berserker.
Doing, yeah, crazy stunting, you know, in this film. And so, I mean, I'm sure they had a stuntman for him at some parts, but there's just a lot of him bouncing around and rolling on the ground and running and beating people up. It's great. He's great in it. I was super happy from start to finish.
I think he and Simon Pegg, these are their best performances. And I like both of them a lot. And that they can put themselves in an ensemble with the likes of Eddie Marsan and Patty Considine and Rosamund Pike, who plays Martin Freeman's sister.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a really strong cast, and they are right there in there. I think it's a smart movie about male menopause and about regret and disappointment. But it's also very funny, and it also goes into crazy genre areas the way you would expect in a Nick Wright in an Edgar Wright movie.
Yes.
I like this a lot.
They are the nerds who make a very specific kind of nerd movie, and yes. I'm very happy that they do it.
And it's funny because thinking about, I was, you know, sort of looking through the filmographies, I was reminded about Paul,
which I did not care for.
Yeah, it's, and I was thinking that in a sense, Paul is kind of like it is what Lust in the Dust is compared to the rest of John Waters movies.
Yeah.
Where, like, okay, you've got the ingredients of this other guy's stuff, and if he'd made it, maybe this would be more interesting, but because he didn't, it's just sort of run-of-the-mill. So, anyway. Oh, God, the Mortal Instruments. City of Bones.
Say it.
You say it.
Say the word.
You say it.
Say
this
the
is
word.
This is your hilarious joke.
Say the word.
You say it.
City of Boners. It's real. It's so good when I say that to you because you laugh so much. City of Boners.
Next year we'll have City of Rashes. So yeah, it's.
Do we even have to talk about this movie?
We should, for the record, for the historical record.
Tell them what it's about, and then we're just going to be done.
Okay, it's this stupid YA adaptation. Did I tell you, by the way, the woman who wrote these books used to write for The Hollywood Reporter?
Really?
Yeah, and then apparently she wrote a lot of Harry Potter fan fiction, and then she wrote this thing.
why am I not surprised about that at all?
So this is very much... You know, sorry, Bibbs. His whole defense of the film was, yes, it rips off from Harry Potter and Twilight, but all slasher films rip off Halloween and Friday the 13th. Yeah, but you know what? This is not good. Percy Jackson may rip off Harry Potter, but those movies are fun. This movie, boring. And how you make a boring movie with werewolf bikers and gay short wearing Asian high warlocks of Brooklyn and leather mini skirted demon hunters and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers
and incest,
potential incest, you know,
more than potential. Like, they find out they're brother and sister, and then they're like, so what?
Well,
we're still into each other.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, the movie allows...
I mean, they don't get down or
anything. No, the movie allows the exit clause of maybe they're...
It would have been a lot cooler if they did.
Yeah, well... Maybe they're being lied to, and maybe they aren't. You know, who knows?
I don't care.
But who cares? Exactly. Yeah. This is just, it's a big snooze. It's over 2 hours long. It felt like, I feel like I'm still in the theater waiting for it to end. It was unbearable. And the sequel is already in production.
Hooray.
So whether we like it or not, no matter how big an egg this one lays, which apparently it is not doing very well.
Good.
Thank you, German backers. You have already greenlit the sequel, and so we'll have to sit through this stupid thing again in a year or so.
I refuse to even talk about it. Fine. We're done.
We're done with Mortal Instruments.
Yeah.
Until next time.
You're next.
You're next.
You're so next.
Yes, you're next. Okay, do you know how old this movie is?
What do you mean?
How old Your Next is?
No.
It premiered at the 2011 Toronto Film Festival.
Did it?
Yeah, and then basically it got picked up by either Summit or Lionsgate, or it got picked up by Lionsgate, and then Lionsgate and Summit merged, and they suddenly had all these movies in the pipeline, and so they basically sat on it until now. And they screened it at South by Southwest this year and or Fantastic Fest actually this year and got a lot of raves, or maybe both, I'm not sure. Anyway, so we're finally getting it, and it's not doing all that well, which sucks because it's because
it's so great.
Well, yeah, because like you take any stupid horror movie, any Last Exorcism. What's that other one? I always forget the name of it.
Last Exorcism Part 2.
No, not that one. The other one, the one that I've actually seen, the one that opened the one that doesn't really end and tells you to go to the website, the Connect to the Cuts one.
What was that called?
I can never remember.
Who cares?
Anyway, that stupid Vatican-y one. That one. I mean, you can release almost any incredibly dumb horror movie and, open at number one and then drop off 70% in the second weekend. But this one did not grab an audience, which is too bad because it is a much better horror movie than almost any of the other ones. I liked Conjuring more, but this is a lot of fun.
Is the best horror movie of the year.
Says you.
And it's maybe one of my favorite movies of the year. I believe that if this is not the new wave of horror, this is at least the next remix. That it steals from the right stuff,
mm-hmm.
makes it into this fresher, lighter, cooler animal. It dispenses with that sort of heavy doom feeling that you got from a lot of the horror movies that were popular in the past, 10 years, the Saws and the Hostels and stuff like that.
The torture porn era.
I call them torture-based entertainments.
For adults.
For adults. And kids. And I really feel, I was told that I was going a little overboard by saying that if someone like Andrew Bujalski made horror movies, this would be what it was. But I don't think I'm going too far with that. Because Joe Swanberg himself, who's a director of the, I'll just go ahead and say it, the mumblecore genre.
Right. Whose new film I'll be talking about shortly.
He, in an interview with Bibbs, and we keep bringing up Bibbs, it's like he's the ghost in the room today. he brought up the expression mumble gore.
Uh-huh.
That was him. He
coined that.
He either coined it or he's propagating it.
Gotcha.
And that's really how I feel about this movie. It is moving this. It takes stuff from the indie world, that lo-fi, more sort of offhand, casual approach to
Ty West and Larry Fessenden are also in the cast.
Human,
of this movie, it's worth noting.
Humanistic sort of filmmaking, and applies it to horror.
Mm.
So the people are really recognizably folks you might know if you knew a rich family who have a giant house in the middle of nowhere. I do know a family like that.
Shut up.
and so you'll be yelling at the screen, but not because the people on screen are behaving stupidly.
Right.
They're behaving like people would behave.
Yes.
All the way down to the point of like arguing whether or not they should go in the basement. and they're like, and ultimately it's like, no, you shouldn't go in the basement. Someone's in the house. And so.
And you're cornered.
Yeah.
What's that whole line that Brad Pitt has in Inglourious Bastards about not getting you don't want to get in a fight in the cellar or whatever.
Right. Yes. It is full of surprises. It is really light on its feet, and yes. I'm so happy that it exists, and I want to go back and see it again, knowing what I know about
it. Right. I felt like it got a little oversold to me after its festival run this year.
I don't think it's been oversold. I know that's the current wisdom right now. Oh, it was overhyped, but I don't believe that.
I'm not parroting anyone. I'm talking about my own personal experience.
Oh, but aren't you? Aren't you parroting everyone?
No.
Isn't that what film critics do?
That's right. We just find out whoever says something first.
Isn't that what you people do?
The rest of us just hop on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
No, I had been hearing between like Entertainment Weekly and people I know who go to those fests in Austin and stuff. I kept hearing, oh, you're next. And so when I finally saw it, I was like, well, yeah, this is good. I like it. It's not the second coming that had been promised to me, but I like it. I think it's very effective. I'm not a horror guy, but
I don't believe it jumpstarts anything brand new.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that all the people involved in this movie, this little collective of folks.
Amy Simetz is in it also, by the way.
Who act in each other's films, who direct movies their own. Like three cast members in this movie are filmmakers. They are directors.
Right.
And they, four, actually.
Well, yeah, Amy Simetz is a director too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so.
And Barbara Crampton from Reanimators.
Yeah. And Chopping Mall. And so. You know, it. These people all are together, moving in the same direction, sort of feeding off each other, you know, supporting each other, giving each other ideas. And I'm really excited to watch where they all go as a group. And that's why, you know, I really do feel there are parallels to the French New Wave here, with everyone sort of, you know, all
or the Sunni Purchase Mafia of the early 90s.
Exactly. there's an identifiable movement that they are creating, that they are a part of, and I'm happy to watch them grow. You know, if this isn't, you know, this feels sort of like a gauntlet being thrown down to me. And if it's not, if the next one that comes along shows that that is the one that is, you know, started, you know, with House of the Devil from Ty West, who is... In this movie. You know, I'm excited to see where it all goes next.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
But
people should see it. It's a lot.
Go.
Yes.
Yes.
And then I saw, speaking of Joe Swanberg, Drinking Buddies.
Yes.
Which is his new film that he's written and directed. And
which would be kind of a good double feature, really, with your next, I think. Because you would really see the connective strands.
No, absolutely.
There, and if you watch them back to back.
And what we said before about...
I only sort of half-watched Drinking Buddies. I was walking in and out of the room.
Right, right.
So I can't really comment on it.
Yeah, it's
But what I saw was enough to know that it's the kind of movie that these guys are all doing.
It's in limited release, but it's also on demand, which is how I watched it. You can watch it at home. It's interesting, well, you know, because we talked earlier about Wong Kar-wai and how he conveys so much about character and stuff without... necessarily using dialogue. And I think Swanberg does the exact opposite, which is his movies are very dialogue heavy, but the way that the conversations unfold and the things that people trip up on or the things that they reveal or don't reveal tell you so much about the character more than in a traditional plot, because these really aren't plot heavy films. Going back to, I think the first one of his I saw was Nights and Weekends, I think it was called. So this is a film, and it's a glossier film than I think I'm used to seeing from him. I mean, he's more assured as a filmmaker. This movie is lit like a real movie. It's not like that one from a couple of years ago. That he
Buck.
Did. Yeah, Uncle Buck. Yes, that one.
Boon me.
Yes. Uncle Buck, who can recall his past lives. Hang on. Anyway, but this movie, you know, is
Mon Oncle.
is very well lit and well put together. It stars Olivia Wilde as a woman who works in a small craft brewery, and she is in a relationship with a guy played by why am I always forgetting his name? The Office Space guy.
Jake.
No, the other
Ron one. Livingston.
Ron Livingston.
Ron Livingston.
Uncle Kent. That was the movie I'm thinking of.
Okay.
Anyway, so she's in a relationship with Ron Livingston, who is clearly much more sort of has a more kind of white collary job and is more of an intellectual, where she's more kind of laid back. Her best pal at work is played by Jake Johnson, and they obviously click really well. And it's sort of like, you know, when people talk about my work wife.
Yes.
You know, they definitely, they seem to be work spouses in a lot of ways.
Right.
Jake Johnson is in a relationship with a young school teacher played by Anna Kendrick. The four of them go off for a vacation in the country, and at one point, Livingston and Kendrick's characters go on a hike and have a little wine, and they make out. And so then immediately after the trip, Livingston breaks up with Olivia Wilde, and you think, okay, well, you know, the two couples are going to split and they're going to change partners or whatever, but that's not really what happens right. Next. You know, when Kendrick, in hearing that this has happened, redoubles her efforts to make things work with Jake Johnson. But as things go along, it's more and more clear that you know, Johnson and Wilde's characters do belong together, but they aren't willing to acknowledge that for various reasons.
Yeah.
And over the course of the film, you kind of see them coming dangerously close to becoming a couple and maybe rethinking it and not sure how they want to proceed. You know, it winds up just kind of being a character piece, mainly about the two of them, a little bit about the you know, Kendrick and Livingston characters. But I found it really compelling. I liked their performances. There's a real sort of easiness between them. I haven't seen a lot of female characters in movies like the Olivia Wilde character, who, you know, she likes to get drunk, but she also, you know, not she's an alcoholic, she, you know, she's very smart, she's good at what she does, she is one of the key people who keeps this small craft brewery alive, she's the one who has to call all the distributors, she's the one who organizes their, you know, public events, yada da da da.
She does Aaron's job.
She does our friend Aaron's job, exactly. And I liked her rapport with Jake Johnson. It's funny, who I was thinking, oh, I never watched New Girl, so I guess I'd never seen him before, but he was in Safety Not Guaranteed. He's been in a bunch of stuff that I've seen, and I've liked him in other films. I just never remember that I liked him in other films. Anyway, it's an interesting movie, and if you have seen earlier Swanberg stuff and just thought it was too navel-gazy and too, you know, kind of handheld, lo-fi, mumblecore, whatever, give this one a shot. I think it's a lot more accessible, and I think he's gotten better and better as time goes on at shooting movies, at writing movies, at eliciting performances out of actors, at working, I think, with better actors. It's worth checking out.
Is it better than Frownland?
I still haven't seen Frownland. I suspect it's different from Frownland, based on what you've told me.
I guarantee you it's incredibly
very different from Frownland, yes.
Frownland is so great.
No, I know you're a fan. I need to see it.
About the most difficult person in the world.
Right.
I saw a double feature with the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Yes,
about other difficult people.
Yes.
Are there any other movies left to talk about? That's it, right?
That's it.
We're done. Goodbye.
Wait, no,
just
stop.
Kidding.
Stop.
We got letters. We got DVD recommendations.
DVD recommendations.
Chungking Express.
Which is great.
Wong Kar Wai movie of the 90s starring Fei Wong.
Yes. Even when I didn't like Quentin Tarantino, I was at least happy that he got that movie a wide release.
One of my favorite movies of the 90s.
What happened to that whole Quentin Tarantino distributing film?
I'm sure those movies didn't make any money.
I guess. So he did that one. He did Switchblade Sisters and not a whole lot else. Yeah, I guess it didn't really like, work. But hey, he owns the New Beverly now, so he's keeping it real.
Thank you for owning the New Beverly, Quentin Tarantino.
Yes, you've done right by that place. My pick this week is from the Criterion Collection. They have what they call their Eclipse Collection, where they do the box sets of lesser known films, usually collected by director. They have a new one out called Early Fassbinder. It comes out on Tuesday. With mostly films I've never seen, going all the way back to 1969, so years before he was really a big, you know, had become a major force in world cinema.
Right.
So the box includes, let's see, Love is Colder Than Death. There's a title.
Yes.
Katzelmacher, Gods of the Plague, The American Soldier, and then the one I have seen, which is great, called Beware of a Holy Whore, which is sort of the...
Holy whore!
Yeah. Beware of a holy whore! Which is kind of the anti-Day for Night.
Yeah.
It's a movie about filmmaking that is just really, really, like, makes it look like the worst thing ever. So, yeah.
It might be.
It might be. So, check that out. And then, what do we got, letters?
Well, on my letter...
How have you messed it up this week?
On my letter file, the first thing written in my letter file is not a letter, but I can't remember now why I wrote it there. And it just reads...
Was it a Facebook comment or something?
Pudding.
I can't wait to see where this is going. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Pudding in Toluca Lake.
I think I emailed you something.
I wrote this down to ask you a question about where we go to find pudding in Toluca Lake.
I think I emailed you one of those, like, you know, Daily Candy or Urban Daddy or one of those daily emails where people tell you where to find pudding in Toluca Lake. And it was about pudding in Toluca Lake, and I said we should go get pudding.
Apparently this place is called Olive and Thyme.
Ah, okay.
That's a real place. You can go in and sit down and enjoy a variety of puddings.
Yes.
Attention, British listeners. When we say pudding over here, we don't mean what y'all mean.
Yes.
We mean creamy custardy treats.
Like a mousse.
Yeah. It's not... They call everything pudding over there. Did you know that? I don't know if you're aware of that.
I kind of have picked that up from movies over the years.
So I'm
so glad that you put that in your letters from listeners file. Pudding in Toluca.
Here's why. I know how this happened. Because all the letters come to me, forwarded to me by you.
Uh-huh.
Oh. And they're in a list of all the other emails you sent me. And naturally, I opened up one that said pudding, because that was a subject line, I think. I love pudding.
A glimpse of our marital email communications.
Let's go.
Yes. That's why I sent it to
you. I really want to go there.
I want pudding in Toluca Lake.
All right. Dear Mr. Duralde and Mr. White, it's Julian from the Cinema Touch.
Is that like the cheese touch?
The guy with the word-a-day calendar who loves to butter you up. Thanks again for the shout-out. The email was sent to you a month ago. I don't know. But I guess it got lost in the grand computer-to-computer conversion. Once again, I wanted to say that the podcast is in exquisite territory.
Oh.
Thank you. And congratulations on the new website.
Thank you.
The question I have for you this time is, what movies that have come out in the last few years do you predict will become classic examples of movies from our time many years from now? Such as In the Mood for Love, or Mulholland Drive, or Werkmeister Harmonies, all of which have grown in esteem as classics of our time over the last decade or so.
For the last couple of years?
With all my love, Julian Fadul, The Cinema Touch.
Thank you, Julian.
I've got one.
What?
The Master.
Funny, I was going to say There Will Be Blood.
That's right.
So,
I think both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they will be, because I think his career is going in, I think Paul Thomas Anderson's career is going in the direction of more complex instead of less.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he might, you know, if as long as Annapurna Pictures is around, he'll probably have a way to make films.
Right.
But I'm really excited to see where he's going now, especially with The Master, where everything just was so much more, rich than even There Will Be Blood. And I'm not comparing them as better or worse than the other, but audiences might have a hard time warming up to where he's planning to go, or he might, you know, go back to being a little more, you know, mainstream in his approach. But those two films from this chunk of time, I really think people are going to look back and, you know, oh, look, the Master was not a box office hit.
Well, I know,
and it's time, but look at what we think about it now. You know,
one that I hope increases in esteem. Maybe it's just me that likes it, or maybe I'm part of a minority that likes it. But Charlie Kaufman's Synecdoche, New York.
I think that one will.
I think that's a movie that history will be kind to.
And I think that will probably be even less fondly remembered than The Master by many people, because at least The Master, you know, doesn't flip your brain upside down.
Mm-hmm.
Synecdoche does,
yeah,
intentionally so. And people who didn't like The Master, they just walked out of it going, eh. But people who walked out of Synecdoche who didn't like it, they hated it. They hate it.
Yeah. That's sort of like I Heart Huckabees. I know very few people who were kind of, you know, meh about it. They either adored it or just were furious at it.
So, yeah.
So I love it. Next.
Hola, gentlemen. I have a list of the top 10 best films from my point of view. I also have a top 5 worst and a guilty pleasure.
Well, all right.
Here are his worsts. He ordered them from 5 to 1.
Okay.
Number 5, Movie 43.
Oh, well, look.
Comment, shoot me. Why does Alonzo like this movie?
Because I laughed. I laughed.
The Beach.
Never saw it.
Meet Joe Black.
Boring.
Meet Joe Black is super boring.
It is endless, that movie.
Antichrist, which you hate and I love.
You love, yes.
And Jack and Jill.
Yeah, well.
And here he writes, kill me.
I'll tell you, I would sit through Jack and Jill again before having to sit through either Grown Ups 2 or That's My Boy again.
What about Antichrist?
Hmm.
Where would you put Antichrist in Jack and Jill, Grown Ups 2, and That's My Boy?
Well, see, those are rotten apples and rotten oranges.
But no. The game is
picked. Which one I watch again?
Yeah, what order? Where would you go?
Hmm. I would probably still go with Jack and Jill because I at least glean pleasure out of Al Pacino's performance.
Right.
So that's one thing that movie has going for it. I can't think of a single thing in any of those other three movies that I would want to sit through again. There's nothing that I think, oh, a second round of, you know, the talking fox or Vanilla Ice having sex with a grandma, you know, is going to bring me back for another go round. Jack and Jill, right. If I given the choice, that would be the one I'd watch.
Right. Here we go.
Okay, this is top 10?
Here is 10. From number 10, Saturday Night Fever.
Okay.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Number 9, the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet.
Which I missed again. Here's the thing. That one's a tricky one because not only am I holding out to see it on the big screen, I'm holding out to see it on the big screen in 70 millimeter.
In 70. Well,
and we,
you know,
there was
the
a chance,
Cinematheque will do it.
Yes, because they're very good about bringing back 70. They did it within the last year, and I couldn't go.
You'll like this. Electric Dreams.
Which is not a very good movie.
Whatever.
But it's, I love it.
Angel at My Table.
Oh, great. Just one.
Terrific, yeah.
I was so excited. The very first year that I went to Sundance.
Yeah.
When you go now, everybody goes to the A half. That's where it's really crowded, and that's where the most famous people are there, blah, blah, blah. And the B half is slower. I used to always have to go to the B half because the A half would overlap with Kid Film, the children's festival that we put on in Dallas. So I go to the B half. First day there, I think maybe the first show I went to was the world premiere of Safe.
Oh.
And who should be sitting next to me but Carrie Fox.
Really?
Yeah, who was on the jury that year. And I was
great.
Oh my God, I said it. I think it was Carrie Fox.
Did you bug her?
I didn't. She sat down. I think she introduced herself to me because I don't think I recognized her. I mean, I'd seen Angel by Table, but that's a movie where you don't necessarily recognize the actress out of, you know, hair and whatever.
And it's not like she's a face that is magazine covers or anything.
You know, and I was like, oh, you know, how do you do?
People don't know who she is.
Yeah, totally. Like, I think that might have even still been before that first Danny Boyle movie. So I think I'd only seen her in Angel at My Table. So, you know, she introduced herself. We chatted for a bit. I was not gross.
Well, I didn't think you were going to be gross. You're never gross with people like that. I saw Angel at My Table at the UA Cine in Dallas.
I probably did, too.
Alone. I was alone. And that was a huge theater, and there was no one in the theater except me.
Actually, I might have seen that in Los Angeles during my brief first stint. Anyway, go on.
Before Sunset.
Sure, okay.
Manhattan.
Oh, yes.
The Russians Are Coming.
You know, I saw that for the first time last year, on or 2 years ago, whatever it was, on the TCM cruise.
Uh-huh.
Not that good. It's really labored.
I have never seen it.
It's, you know, you would think, given the people involved in it, that it would be better. It's kind of sitcom-y. Although you love the mothers-in-law, so it's along those
Boy,
lines.
Boy, howdy, do I love the mothers-in-law.
You might like this one, too.
Y'all got me TV? Watch the mothers-in-law. Damn, that show is crazy.
I think season one's out on DVD, too.
I don't care. I'm just watching it on me TV with all the other 95-year-old people.
Yes.
Happiness.
I love Happiness.
Yep. Shallow Grave.
That's the first Danny Boyle movie.
Yes,
I couldn't remember the name. Yes.
I was waiting to get to it before I would tell
Funny.
You.
Funny.
Number one, his number one movie is The Visitor with Richard Jenkins. We're not fans.
No.
We're not fans at all.
No.
I love
Win Win, and I love his other movie, or yeah. Station Agent, but yeah, that one.
I know.
I hate it when ethnic people teach old white guys how to be funky.
I know one of the producers, and I felt pretty bad after writing the review. I was like, he's going to hate me now. Sorry. You know, like, you can't let that get in your
no,
way.
No, I know.
And if you feel like it will get in your way,
you shouldn't write the review,
yeah. Yeah. I've liked other things he's produced since then. So.
Yes. So that's 90% knife?
Guilty Pleasures. Well, 90.
What did I...
The Russians are coming and I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. 85%.
His guilty pleasures are Angels and Demons.
As long as he mentions parachuting Ewan McGregor.
Well, that's why, I'm sure. That's why this is one of his guilty pleasures. Beyond the Sea.
Oh.
Scoop.
Oh, come on. That is like one of the five worst Woody Allen movies.
The Island.
Didn't see it, although that's the one that totally rips off parts of the Clonus horror.
Yes.
Right?
And Space Jam.
Woohoo! The website is still online.
I know.
Yeah, 85%.
Thank you, Matthew. Matthew with the last name I can't pronounce.
Well, then it withheld.
Schufrider. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for killing it.
You're terrible.
David Alonso, thank you for reading my top 10 list and top 10 Christmas list. And Dave correctly pointed out that the best New Year's movie is The Poseidon Adventure, although I will still take Sunset Boulevard and After the Thin Man.
Or the French caper film New Year's Eve.
You've asked people to submit their bottom 10 movies lists. I really have
Happy New Year. Sorry, New Year's Eve was awful Gary Marshall movie.
I really have only one bottom movie list. One bottom movie, The Other Sister.
Speaking of Gary Marshall.
A film where Gary Marshall tries to do for the mentally retarded what he did for prostitutes in Pretty Woman. In all seriousness, why do studios let him make more movies? A gentleman I was dating at the time rented The Other Sister and then got mad at me for laughing at the wrong times and for not finding it charming. Poor Juliette Lewis.
That's when you know it's time to break up.
But she did redeem herself by being a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race and doing a spot-on Jiggly Caliente impression. Dishonorable mention, Forrest Gump.
Mm-hmm.
Love you guys. Thanks so much for the podcast. Frank in Indianapolis.
Is Juliette Lewis still your favorite Scientologist?
Who else?
I'm enjoying Leah Remini now.
She ain't a Scientologist anymore.
But she's a great ex.
She's my favorite ex-Scientologist.
She and Paul Haggis.
But Juliette Lewis is the grand champion of Scientologists.
Hmm.
She's the best Scientologist in the world. If all Scientologists were like Juliette Lewis, Scientology would be a kick-ass religion. But they're not like her. She's groovy. Is a great actress, is in a band, wears tight pants, and goes on Howard Stern. And answers his questions about Scientology.
Yes.
So
she was. I really liked her in that roller derby movie that.
Yeah.
That Drew Barrymore.
The Drew Barrymore made. Yeah. What was it called?
Stomp it or something.
Kick it.
Pump it.
Stick it.
Stick it.
Might no, been, that no, it wasn't. Was stick not, it was the is
the gymnastics.
It's not gymnastics. That was a gymnastics movie. Stick it.
It should have been called Stick It. That's a good title. They should just use it all the time.
Bop It?
It was not
called. It was called Bop It?
No.
Womp It?
Brother, I'm going to look that up.
Wham It? Blurt It? Crunk It?
Whip It?
Whip It.
We were close. Has she been anything since then? I never seen Julia.
When are they going to make the Bop It movie?
Not soon enough. I'm sure it's part of whoever's studio has a deal with Hasbro, you know?
Yeah. Hasbro, make this movie. Make the Bop It movie. All right. Who's this letter from? Hang on. This letter is from Mike.
Okay.
In San Francisco. So here's my parenthetically open parentheses, kind of old school gay, closed parentheses. Top 11 movies. Number 1, All About Eve.
Great.
Number 2, The Lion in Winter.
Sure.
Number 3, Funny Girl.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm not a huge Streisand.
Did you say kind of old school gay?
Super old school gay.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's kicking it like that right here. He says, I'm not a huge Streisand person, but she's, all caps, so amazing in it.
It's true.
4, Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
5, Reds.
Mm,
he says, I'm a sucker for a big choir singing the Internationale in Russian.
It's pretty great.
6.
That's how you send people out for an intermission.
Smiles of a Summer Night.
Okay.
7, Sunset Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
8, Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
9, Touch of Evil.
Mm-hmm.
10, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yeah.
He says, I defy anyone to be able to stop watching Liz Taylor in this movie. She's a force of effing nature. 11, Mildred Pierce.
Mm.
The role Joan Crawford was born to play.
Totally. You are 100% knife.
He says, and while I'm writing,
mm-hmm.
I wish I could understand why anyone likes 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Go on.
He says, I've watched this 3 times, once as a 13-year-old kid discovering sci-fi in the mid-70s, and twice as an adult, and every time I'm bored out of my mind, all caps, Hal, just kill them and be done with it. Care to briefly explain what the appeal is? That's his whole letter. Well, Mike in San Francisco,
okay.
How do I make you love 2001, which is one of my all-time favorite movies?
You have to think about 2001... I don't know, you don't have to do anything, but I like how Danny Peary breaks it down, where it's basically you have this alien force that is testing mankind. You know, you have the monolith at the beginning with the cavemen, and one of the cavemen learns not only how to make tools, but also how to commit violence.
Yes.
And in observing that, or maybe he gets that power from the monolith, depending on how you interpret that. Then the monolith turns up again, goes to the moon and waits for man to get there.
To the moon!
To the moon! And once it knows that man is there, then it realizes that man has evolved and has proceeded forward, you know, in its march onward, even though we're still fighting. You know, the U.S. is keeping secrets from the Russians about what's up there, and, you know, there may be a Cold War instead of, you know... Australopithecus is, you know, beating each other with donkey bones, but but we're still at war. We're still fighting, and then when we travel to the source of the monolith, man has to be strong enough to destroy the machine, and it's only in disengaging Hal that Bowman has shown that he is the next phase. In man's evolution, and then he is allowed to die and be reborn as the star child who represents the next step of evolution. Spoiler. that's my take on it, and I find that really compelling as a story, and I think it's a great movie. And if it still doesn't work for you, maybe you'll like 2010 better. It's a little more straightforward. I don't know. But I think it's great. I think 2001 is one of the great movies ever made.
Mike in San Francisco, I don't have an answer for you. You're wrong! Stop being wrong.
I'll get it together. I will say this. If you get the chance...
Well, you're going to blow it.
If you get the chance to see it projected, particularly if you get the chance to see it projected in 70mm, by all means go. It is a movie that really lends itself to that kind of presentation and rewards the viewer.
And if you can get Kelly Clarkson to put you in her time machine to go back to the moment where Alonzo took our friend PW to the Cinematheque to see it, and the guy on acid freaked out in the middle of the movie.
That's on YouTube, actually.
Which is on YouTube. Let's put that on the wall.
Okay.
So that people can see the freak out.
I was there for
that. He was sitting right there when it happened. Poor Will. Poor PW had to be...
He was already getting freaked out by the movie. And then on top of his cupcake of anxiety came this whole 4D experience.
I wish I'd been there that night.
Oh, it was something else. Yeah. Well, I wish I'd been there when you saw Frownland and the Garbage Pail Kids.
No, you don't. You'd have pulled your hair out.
You don't know.
I know you.
You don't know.
I know you.
Not that well.
Have you?
Clearly. I like a good endurance, cinematic endurance test sometimes. I think you underestimate me.
Sometimes. 1 month from our 18th anniversary of love, and you're going to start questioning how much I know you?
Well, I'm having to question it because you're demonstrating that, you know, you are not... You are erratic.
I know how you are.
No, you don't.
Have you ever watched the Garbage Pail Kids movie?
No. I wanted to go that night. I was out of town.
Mm, yeah, you were. I took Aaron.
I know.
Yeah.
You've been talking about it ever since. I know.
One of the greatest films of the 1980s, that's why.
And I do love Anthony Newling.
You'll love him in the Garbage Pail Kids
I'm
movie.
Sure. It's one of his career highlights, right behind Ken Hieronymus Merkin, Forget Mercy Hump, mm-hmm. Find Your Happiness.
Yes. We're done.
We are done. I'm still retooling our listen to other shows.
Listen to The Lunch.
Go to ChristyLemire.com. Yeah. Listen to...
The B-Movies Podcast.
Yes, listen to Matt and Gray on Rotten Tomatoes Radio on SiriusXM. Listen to Frank and Dory on SiriusXM. Listen to Derek and Romaine on SiriusXM. If you've never listened to the Flophouse podcast, I generally don't plug them because they get much better write ups in places like EW and Parade magazines. They don't need us. But this week's episode where they do Bullet to the Head, Elliot Kalin does a Sylvester Stallone impersonation that had me crying laughing. So check it out. Team Jack, of course.
I don't know who else.
You know, just people. If you've ever heard this show, you've heard me go through this list.
Right.
Check out linoleum-knife.com.
Yes.
Like our page on Facebook. Follow us at linoleumcast on Twitter.
Yes.
You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes. And please leave us positive reviews because those help other people find the show. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com. And you can send us your top 10 list, your bottom 10 list, anything else to
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Well done, Dave White. linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Next week is Labor Day, and the movies will...
Let's not do a podcast.
No, we're not going to not do a podcast. Right. But we will spend very little time talking about the week's new movies.
We will spend very little time doing a podcast.
And we will... I would like to maybe look back at the summer.
Why?
Because I just feel like it.
Because
here's the thing. It stuns me that World War Z and Star Trek were this summer. Like these, it feels like we've been talking about summer movies for the last 100 years.
So I'm not going to look back on anything.
No, I'm just kind of stunned at how much they crammed into 4 months. It's just been, you know.
No. You can't make me.
I certainly can. You will do what I say.
No, I won't.
And I'm going to be wearing cargo shorts when we do
I'm not.
So there.
I quit.
Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next week.
Goodbye.